Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio, where we bring you information about Minnesota's National Guard, the military community, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Program, and Department of Veterans Affairs. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force and a member of the VFW and American Legion. Now, here's Tom Lyons.
Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we'll meet the Minnesota National Guard's newest Assistant Adjutant General, and we'll hear how you can continue serving in the Minnesota State Patrol. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
The Minnesota National Guard is well-equipped to accomplish our missions both domestically and overseas. In order to be prepared for all types of environments and challenges, we train as we operate. Sometimes overlooked, however, is the impact that the training and daily operations we conduct has on the environment. I'm proud to say that for many years, Camp Ripley's Environmental Office has been at the forefront of conservation and stewardship efforts, not only within the state, but the nation. The Environmental Office conducts numerous ongoing studies on wildlife and plants to document the quality of wildlife habitat found at Camp Ripley, and to investigate relationships between military activities and sensitive wildlife species. To date, these studies have demonstrated a high degree of compatibility between military activities and wildlife species. For example, while it has long been thought that timber wolves are sensitive to wilderness dwellers unable to adapt to human activity, a radial telemetry study was found that Ripley wolves breed and raise their young relatively close to centers of military activity and are, in fact, quite adaptable. One of the great success stories of the Camp Ripley Environmental Office is the identification and tracking of the bear population within Camp Ripley Reservation. Through the 20 years of the program, Camp Ripley personnel have been able to identify nuisance bears and also to locate bear dens on the post. This year, as in past years, school groups, journalists, and visitors of all kinds will have the opportunity to visit a bear den on Camp Ripley. They'll see the bear's natural habitat firsthand and get a look inside the Environmental Office's efforts to balance the needs of the military training with environmental stewardship. For more information on the Camp Ripley Environmental Office, as well as the Environmental Classroom, log on to MinnesotaNationalGuard.org and click on Camp Ripley.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now from the Minnesota Air National Guard is Brigadier General David Hamler. General, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks a lot, Tom. I remember being here late 2013 when I had another job as a state air surgeon, but now I'm back in another capacity.
And you were a colonel then, sir.
I was a colonel then and just recently was promoted. So
congratulations.
Thank you. I have more responsibilities, of course.
More responsibilities. Got to be a big honor to become a general officer.
Yeah.
General, I want to dig into your career in the military a little bit and reintroduce you to the audience. Can you tell us how long have you been in the military?
I think I looked at my VP MFP, and that was about 28 years now. So I was 3 years active and 25 now in a guard status.
And you started with the Ohio National Guard?
Correct. I was born and raised in Ohio. Went to school there and was minding my own business, and I found a fellowship to attend here in Minnesota, and I came up to the University of Minnesota, quickly fell in love with it and my job, which is a physician, and have not left.
So we converted you to a Minnesotan.
Correct, even though I was at the Ohio State University.
And, General, you also have a career in medicine.
My job in medicine is now a facial plastic reconstructive surgeon, so that was the fellowship I attended here. Going back, I always wanted to do something of service, and that's pretty much been my lifestyle. And that allows me to do humanitarian missions, allows me to help people who are afflicted with either trauma or congenital or even cancer-based injuries.
General, how hard has it been to balance your civilian career and your military career?
You got to ask my wife that. So one of the things that's been remarkable is, as we say in the military, is what the home front brings to the fight. And my wife is a saint. She just takes it all in. We have two lovely kids, and of course they're slowly moving out of the house now. But she's been the mainstay, which makes all that possible.
makes everything a little nicer when your wife's at home supporting you in all the things that you do.
Correct.
General, I understand that the last time you were here, you were a colonel in the Minnesota Air National Guard, and you were in charge of the medevac flights and served as flight surgeon. Are you still doing all those duties?
I still hold those. I still like being with the guys in the squadron, as you'd call it. And we actually just took a trip to Aviano, Italy, and that was a mission where we took some supplies over and brought some troops back. So I still like that and taking care of the guys. So that's still part of what I like to do.
In general, I understand you got some quiet encouragement from the adjutant general to become qualified to be a general officer.
Yeah, that's something I'm probably going to get ribbed about, but I'm a hold against him too. The tag General Nash is very much a influence on me, and I could tell you without doubt the quiet you put in there was more than quiet. We would be at an organizational meeting of maybe 400 people. He would point me out in the audience, say, if this guy only did his PME. And so, yeah, he was a very strong influence on my career.
Sounds like quiet encouragement from the tag for me, sir.
Yes.
Now, I wanted to ask you, in this new position, you are now Brigadier General of the Air National Guard and the Minnesota's Assistant Adjutant General Air. What does all of that mean, and does that present you with some new opportunities and some new duties, sir?
Yes, I've always been medicine based. So in DOD terms, there's a line side, and when you have the medical side, you probably tend to do more medicine. But at the same time, with the new position, one of my goals is to make sure that the air is represented. That anything that has to do with deploying strategic themes that air can bring to the battle is doing that, and that's really to tout the wings. Both the 148th and the 133rd's capabilities. The 133rd has infrastructure that handles C-130 transport. At Duluth and the F-16s, that's guardianship. So those two things bring a lot to the fight. And our goal as the chief of staff, who's Brigadier Robert Caton, and myself as the assistant tag, is to represent the air capabilities. The other thing is we want to sustain any missions and find new missions that will be out there. So we go to D.C. and we count on our legislators, our senators, as well as the governor here to make sure we have ready, relevant jobs to take care of. Finally, we want to take care of our folks. You know, you take care, most importantly, you take care of the airmen who are out there, making sure that they have excellent care plans, that they're promoted when they need to be, that if they need mentoring, we take care of those. But also, finally, the tag is very important in all this, so we want to make sure that we enforce and advise him how his recognized comp plan is working, and I could talk about that a little later about how his comp plan is formulated.
So, General, in the Minnesota National Guard, there's about 14,000 National Guardsmen and women, roughly 12,000 Army and 2,000 Air. Is that correct?
Yeah, we're a little on the underside of that. So there's probably 1,500 at each wing, give or take 1,000. But we're a little on the undersized part. But we bring a lot to the fight. So, and then airmen our soldiers, you know, they're very, very much in our minds about how we take care of them and their families. So be it the air or the Army side, we have total plans to take care of them. In terms of the tag's priorities, he has six that he's discussed, and one of those is the Yellow Ribbon Program, which I'm sure you've discussed here. And that's taking care of our troops, not only when they return but while they're deployed, but also their families. So the Yellow Ribbon campaign is one of those things that we strongly take care to help our fellow troops and our airmen.
In general, we talk about that as often as we can because there's a lot of civilians out there helping to support our families these days. Generally, I would assume on the air side, the 133rd, as you said, has C-130s and the 148th has the F-16s. There must be a federal and state mission. Do you have to balance those as well? And they have to be different between with the equipment.
Correct. One of the things that in even a soldier or an airman is taking care of the state level. And the things that we've discussed here in the past is domestic operations, where if there were a disaster, we want to be able to do that. We can always bring our airmen to the battle in that. The C-130s provide lift, not only for medical, but also for things like hardware, any type of instrumentation that needs to be carried to the scene. And then the guardianship point of the F-16s is that they've always flown alert missions to make sure that our skies are, you know, safe for us. And one of the things that we're looking at now is trying to make sure they have a ready mission if the alert mission goes away. So we're talking to our state legislator and our federal senators about those things. So, yeah, there are those necessities that we...
General, I have to take a short break. When I come back, I'd like to talk a little bit more about the air side, the Minnesota Air National Guard. We're speaking with Air Force Brigadier General David Hamler, who is Minnesota's Assistant Adjutant General Air, on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and we've been visiting with Brigadier General David Hamler, who is the Minnesota National Guard's the Assistant Adjutant General for the air side. And, of course, there's one on the Army side as well, isn't there, sir?
Correct.
Now, as we've talked earlier, in Minnesota, there are a couple of air bases. There's a 133rd out at the Fort Snelling, and there's up in Duluth, the 148th Fighter Wing. Today, sir, I'm wondering, across the Minnesota National Guard, we've still got a lot of people deployed. Mm. And we've learned over the years being on the show that the Army side usually goes out sometimes for a little bit longer periods, but air goes out more frequently, but for shorter periods. So on the air side, you must have some people deployed today.
Correct, Tom. We actually have our air package. They're deployed to Kuwait right now. And with that is probably 3 to 6 aircraft at any one time, and they share the duty with other states, and they substitute in and out. So we have 2 rotations that we're going to do. 1 rotation's over there now. So they're deployed, and at the same time, you know, we're taking care of them abroad and their families here at home. And it's amazing, looking at my own deployment. When you deploy, you're in the fight. You know what's going on. Your family does. The wing does. It seems such a forgotten thing when you come back and no one really knows a war is going on. I mean, that's outside of family and friends. But if you look at the everyday folks that you're, you know, working with here, you just don't see it. So there's not that emphasis anymore, especially with the drawdown we're doing. So we have them deployed. That's the 133rd. The 148th actually has been flying alert missions all over the country. They had one here locally, and they fly CAT missions, and it's just the guardianship of the skies. And if you go back to 9/11, some of the only aircraft that were allowed up were those who could actually bring something to the fight if something were to continue. So they were in the skies then, and they're in the skies now. Their mission takes them all over the continent, and they just recently returned from Bulgaria, where they're working with a sister state and looking how they can help capabilities abroad as well. So they're very busy, as are our C-130s here at the 133rd. But I'm always reminded of the difference and how the fight's going on and how everything here in the States seems to be really not completely irrelevant to it, but they're seem to lose focus.
Civilians just go about their business as normal, and sometimes we forget about our people in harm's way that are deployed all over the world.
Exactly, and we can't let that happen for our troops.
General, I understand you got a ride in an F-16 recently. And just so our listeners know, about how long does it take for an F-16 to get from Duluth to Minneapolis?
I think about 7 to 9 minutes.
My goodness.
They get here pretty quickly, because one of the things that you talk about in safety is where your alternative landing site is. So the alternative landing site for the Duluth area is Minneapolis Airport, Minneapolis St. Paul Airport.
Just think about that for a minute. That's a 3.5-hour drive, and they get here in 7 to 9 minutes.
Yeah, it's just amazing. Goodness.
So as you said, 9/11, 2001, when all the aircraft were grounded, our F-16s were out securing the skies over the United States of America in case there were more attacks.
Correctly. And one of the things is that they bring is that training that they know our area, but they know all areas as well. And if there's anything that was going to be in North America, they could probably handle. I would like to say that, you know, that mission is secure, but there's always issues with new missions and with the drawdown that everyone may or may not know of our troops from, obviously, the OCONUS, meaning the fight abroad. But dollars are scarce now, and resources are scarce, so we have to look at ways of keeping our folks in the fight. We have great troops, both airmen and Army, and we want to be able to keep those folks' capabilities up, meaning training, supply them the resources they need to do the jobs that they've learned to do. So we're always looking for that next job to have our folks handle.
In general, it's my understanding that the F-16s in Duluth were recently upgraded and that the 148th has won a lot of awards for being top-notch outfit.
Yeah, the 148th and the 133rd are, when I go to Guard Bureau, you just mentioned Minnesota, and I think that's across the board with all the National Guard in terms of Army and Air, top-notch individuals. It's just the Minnesota way of doing things. So, yes, the 148th won numerous awards, and they've been rewarded by having the top aircraft, the top F-16s that are out. Now, what that means is that if you have the top equipment and you have the top personnel, then that means you're going to be utilized in a greater fashion. So you reap what you sow.
Sounds like the Minnesota way. Let's get the good stuff and let's get to work.
Exactly.
We're speaking with Brigadier General David Hamler from the Minnesota Air National Guard on Minnesota Military Radio. General, earlier in the show, you mentioned the Adjutant General's comp plan. Can you explain to me what that's all about?
Essentially, there's areas of focus that we as assistant adjutant generals want to make sure that we focus on so that we can do the best for our troops and also take, besides taking care of them, putting our best foot forward as a state. And one of them is having a ready force. That means that the force has to be well-trained, ready to meet the mission, which is both a federal mission and a state mission. A lot of the state mission that you've heard about in the past are the floods that were yearly and year and out up in northern Minnesota. But also there's other things that could happen. You had a landslide the other day. You had the bridge that went down in the past. So there's a lot of issues that we've had in the past and things that we're guarding against in the future. So we want a ready force to meet that. The other is an optimal force. Sometimes we have some redundancy. Sometimes we have young, eager troops who are ready to step up. And that means sometimes we lose some of our older, but we want an optimal force structure so they're not wasting dollars, because in this era of limited resource, we want to be optimal in how we utilize them.
So that means the best force possible for the money available.
Correct. Okay. The other is cyber. You know, you hear so much about cyber capabilities and how that can be a detriment if it's compromised. So we're going to have a cyber mission that rewards not only our capabilities here, but also puts us on the forefront of what ready new jobs may be out there or missions. Next is a sustainable force. We have to, again, train our people, know that we can reinforce our folks at any time, and again, get rid of some of the redundancy. Next, yellow ribbon. We mentioned that, and that's where we take care of our troops coming home and their families. So that's a point of emphasis. And finally, diversity. That's going to be something that I'll personally champion. And I think it's important that we want our National Guard forces to look like the state of Minnesota and look like what is nationally. So diversity is very important. You don't know where you'll be, when you'll be there, but you want to have folks in the Guard who can readily respond and become part of the makeup of our country if indeed we're called to duty.
And how are we doing on the diversity issue?
Well, it's one of those things that, you know, there's always issues with where you live. Minnesota has a majority population, and that's where we draw from. We always recruit to anywhere from 104, 106%. But now we have to make the emphasis not only recruit what walks in the door, so to speak, but we have to go to those communities that are less represented so that we start looking like the state of Minnesota. So we always have that battle.
Doing a good job of it, but you're always striving to do better.
Correct.
All right. General, we just got a couple of minutes left. I'm wondering what type of opportunities does the Minnesota National Guard have for those listeners that might want to go into the medical field and serve their country just like you have in your career?
Obviously, I can speak more to the medical. I know personally, we went out and we had a health professionals recruitment you could say it was like a almost a convention where we sat down and we brainstormed to see how we could get more. I remember at one point I was the only doc for the 133rd. So we had to find a way to reinforce that or bring up the numbers. And so we committed ourselves to recruiting those. So we went to the schools, went to the medical schools, went to the undergrads to try and bolster that. We ended up having a scholarship provided for people who will stay in Minnesota, hopefully, but we can train them to become members of the National Guard. And you can do that in any field. If there's areas that we aren't as strong, that we don't have as many recruits, we can specialize in those areas. And that's something that we'd like to do in all areas, from anywhere from being an electrician, a civil engineer, to being a mechanic. All those fields are wide open. Those are all ready skills that you can develop in the military, in the Minnesota National Guard, and take back to the workplace or their own career.
So, General, you'd recommend to our listeners, if they're interested in that, come on out and talk.
That is an excellent suggestion.
General, congratulations on your promotion, and I hope you have a great time on the air side, being Minnesota's Assistant Adjutant General. I'm sure you're going to do a fantastic job, and thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule to come visit with us today.
Okay. Thanks, Tom. Thanks for having us on.
It's Brigadier General David Hamler from the Minnesota Air National Guard on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. In a moment, we'll show you how you can continue serving in the Minnesota State Patrol.
Hi, this is Bill Popp of the Minnesota Military Family Foundation. An Army squad is made up of 8 soldiers, and when the squad is on patrol, each soldier is dependent on each other for safety. When a soldier is distracted because of a financial crisis with the family back home, that puts every soldier on the squad at risk. The Minnesota Military Family Foundation helps turn a bad situation into a positive one. The foundation provides financial support during a financial crisis at home. This helps re-energize the soldier. The soldier feels the financial burden lifted and has feelings of pride because of the support from the community at home. When the soldier is no longer focused on the financial crisis at home, the soldier is able to stay engaged in the mission and do his duty to protect other soldiers in the squad. When we help one soldier, we're helping all soldiers. When we help one military family, we're helping all military families. If you're in a position to help, please donate. Go to MinnesotaMilitaryFamilyFoundation.org.
Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we'll hear how you can continue serving in the Minnesota State Patrol. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly message from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shalito.
Have you served honorably, are a Minnesota resident, and are interested in higher education? If you answered yes to these questions, you may be eligible for education benefits in Minnesota. The Minnesota GI Bill was enhanced in 2013 to provide post-secondary educational assistance to eligible Minnesota veterans, non-veterans who served in the military, and eligible spouses and children. The Minnesota GI Bill is available to qualifying veterans who have served honorably in any branch of the armed forces during any time. For full eligibility requirements, visit MinnesotaVeteran.org.
Thank you, Commissioner Shalito. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. The Minnesota State Patrol is a progressive law enforcement agency providing superior service to Minnesota's residents, visitors, and allied agencies. Their mission is to protect and serve all people in the state through assistance, education, enforcement, provide support to allied agencies, and provide for the safe, efficient management of traffic on Minnesota's roadways. The Minnesota State Patrol actively seeks to recruit and hire a diverse workforce of highly motivated men and women to become state troopers. Go to mntrooper.com for more information about the Minnesota State Patrol. The Minnesota State Patrol is currently accepting applications until July 31st at 4 p.m. Joining us now to talk about the Minnesota State Patrol is James Swanson, a state trooper. Mr. Swanson, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, sir.
How long have you been a state trooper?
I've been a state trooper for 3 years.
And I understand that before that, you were pretty well occupied in the military.
Yes.
Can you tell us about your military career, sir?
Certainly. I entered the military in 1981 as a nuclear machinist mate with the Navy, and upon graduating from boot camp, went down to nuclear power school and got to stay in for about 20 weeks of the 24-week school before they decided I needed to go to prep school for a year. So I went to prep school at Newport, Rhode Island, then the Naval Academy for 4 years, at which point I decided I didn't want to really stay in nuclear power, so I took a commission in the U.S. Marine Corps, 8 years active duty with the Marine Corps, 3 years with the Reserve, and then I spent the remaining years of my military career up here with the Minnesota National Guard.
On the Army side?
On the Army side, yes, sir.
So the only thing you've missed is the Air Force and the Coast Guard.
Yes, sir. And every time I went down to the air base, they tried to recruit me over there, and I said, I am not buying another set of uniforms. Sorry.
I imagine if you went home and told your wife you're going to get some new uniforms, she said, make up your mind.
Yes, sir.
So you had quite a career in the military.
Yes, sir.
And ended up as a lieutenant colonel?
Mm-hmm.
And did that career in the military and all the things you've learned, do you think that set you up to be a good state trooper?
I do. The patrol is very oriented the same way that the military is as far as structure and things like that. And the unique thing about the state patrol is we're all solo in our vehicles. So part of what the patrol looks for is trust. I mean, our core values are it's rich. Respect, integrity, courage, and honor. And we look for people that are able, self-motivators, because the supervisors, you may not see a supervisor for a month. So they have to be able to trust you in doing your job out on the roadways, protecting, trying to keep people safe.
So the discipline and the training that you had in the military gave you a good footing for being in the Minnesota State Patrol.
Very much, sir.
Now, the State Patrol is a different organization from the local law enforcement agencies. Can you explain the difference a little bit?
Yes, sir. The local law enforcement agencies, be it police, sheriff's departments, things like that, they deal with the public in a very personal manner, where they're in the homes and things like that. They see all kinds of aspects of people. You know, you deal with homeless folks in the house, domestics, robberies, things like that. The State Patrol, we deal mainly with the roadways of Minnesota in the metro area. In outstate Minnesota, we do some backup for local law enforcement, but for the most part, we deal with the roadways. So interstates, highways, county roads, things like that.
So your mission then is to keep our highways safe?
Absolutely.
And you've been there a few years now. Is there a little different culture in the Minnesota State Patrol as opposed to a local law enforcement agency?
I really can't speak to that because I don't know enough about the local law enforcement agencies to get a feel for the camaraderie and stuff. I think they have a lot tighter group of people, whereas, I mean, like in St. Paul, I patrol St. Paul to Wisconsin, St. Paul to Rush City. But in St. Paul, if we get in trouble, you know, we call out, we need assistance, we have St. Paul PD there in a matter of maybe 30 seconds, depending on where we're at. Those guys are very tight-knit because they're always backing each other up.
So they know each other pretty well.
Exactly.
Where in a state patrol, there might be guys you've never even met.
Correct.
But the state patrol, have you found that they're professional and have high standards?
Yes, sir. It's one of those, the history within the patrol, each thing has its own certain specialty. Like my MSP collar brass. When I was at the academy, that was the first thing that we got on our uniform. And the chief came up and he presented that to every person. The brass belt buckle that we wear has a very specific meaning. It comes from another state that we brought to Minnesota. So everything that we have on our uniform, there's a history behind it. We routinely go back through history. All the officers that have passed away, the state troopers, you know, we have specific laws, the Ted Foss move over law that came about in the state of Minnesota because of a state trooper being hit and killed on the roadway. So we do things a little different.
Is there a story behind the distinctive hat?
That part I'm not sure of. I know that's one that we love to wear.
Well, it's distinctive, and it fits with the uniform, and it fits with everything we've seen. Now, the State Patrol is looking for a few good men, I assume, from what we read earlier. Are there initiatives that help veterans become police officers in Minnesota and State Patrol?
Yes, sir. The newest one was brought about by the State Patrol Board, or the Post Board. They went back and they looked at some of the different things that the military has to offer, and what they did is they decreased the amount of time that you have to be in a military occupational specialty in order to take a reciprocity test. It went from, I think it was 5 years before, that you had to be in the specialty in order to take the reciprocity test to be a certified member of the post. But now it's down to, I think it's, well, it's right here, 2 years of military occupational specialty and 2 year degree, or 4 years of the MOS, the military occupational specialty and law enforcement. So what that does, it allows anybody that's been in the military for a 4 year contract, if you have the military occupational specialty of a law enforcement, you can come back and be eligible to take the post board test.
We're speaking with State Trooper James Swanson from the Minnesota State Patrol on Minnesota Military Radio. So, Mr. Swanson, does the State Patrol, are they actively looking for veterans?
We do. We actively look, and one of the other programs, the Law Enforcement Training Opportunity, allows anybody with a four-year degree to come into the patrol. They go through a 16-week course at Hennepin Technical College. It has everything that the law enforcement or the criminal justice major gets in the skills program, but because you already have a four-year degree, it condenses everything. So a military member with a four-year degree coming out now has the opportunity to do this specifically and be eligible to be a state trooper.
So does that, I'm assuming you're talking about the Minnesota State Patrol Training Academy, does that qualify for GI, for the GI Bill?
Both those do. The Law Enforcement Training Opportunity and the Training Academy both count towards the GI Bill.
And I want to ask, does the Minnesota State Patrol have some currently serving members of the Minnesota National Guard?
We do, sir. Right now, I believe there's 23 members that are active in the military right now.
And I would guess some of those have been deployed?
Yes, they have.
How well does that work for the State Patrol?
Because the patrol backs it and everybody in the patrol backs it, we absorb that. The troopers have to cover the different shifts and things like that, but we know the reason that the person's not there is because they're serving the country, so it makes it a little easier.
So does the Minnesota State Patrol as a group support the families then when they are deployed?
Absolutely. We have a peer counseling within the State Patrol, and it's for service members and their families and the peer counselors. Matter of fact, we're having in August, I think it's August 19th, they're having a new training, refresher training, and I've been asked to go and brief them also on the programs that are available to veterans throughout the state. So they want to learn more and more about the programs in order to, when they get somebody, either a military member or a family member, they want to know who to call to make things better.
Jim, we're going to have to take a short break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about veterans becoming members of the Minnesota State Patrol. We're speaking with James Swanson, a state trooper from the Minnesota State Patrol on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been joined in the last segment, in this segment, by Jim Swanson, state trooper with the Minnesota State Patrol. Jim, before we went to break, we were talking about the fact that you've got some military, or part-time military, that serve as Minnesota State Troopers, and occasionally some of those are deployed. And I think you said that they've asked you to come in and speak to some of the families, and that goes back to your military career, doesn't it?
Yes, sir. For a few years when I was full-time with the Minnesota Guard, I was the director of family programs for the state, and it coincided with the largest and longest deployment of 1st Brigade that was deployed for well over their 12-month period.
Way past their 12-month period.
So we set up in Minnesota the family assistance centers. I think we had 9 at the most. At the highest peak, we had 9 family assistance centers throughout the state, and then the family programs office. And then from there, with the assistance of Chaplain Morris, they set up the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon campaign, the reintegration program that now has spread from Minnesota pretty much throughout the entire Army. So soldiers come back, they do a 30, 60, and 90-day reintegration program along with their families. And it's helpful for our peer counselors in the state patrol to know this information, because as they talk with one of their peers from their district that may be having issues when he comes back, you know, not so much with them themselves, but while they were gone, life has kind of passed them by. When you're gone for 12 months, you see the 12 months over in the deployment cycle, but when you come home, everything's changed. Everybody's a year older. Maybe the spouse decided that they wanted to change the color of the interior, house, bedroom. They changed the man cave.
Families have learned how to cope in your absence.
Exactly.
And now, now it's like you're the newcomer coming back in.
So the peer counselors are looking for information as to, you know, what do we need to look for to make sure that our service member / trooper comes back in smoothly, and if they have issues, who can we get them to assist them to get back to the way life was, or more accurately, to move them to the way life is now.
So because of your military service, you're well-versed in all the resources available to help those families and returning service members.
I'm well-versed as of 3 years ago, and I'm in the process of finding out, you know, what has changed so that I can provide that to the peer counselors and make sure we're on track.
Well, stay tuned to our show because you'll learn something every week.
Yes, sir.
Now, we better get back to the job at hand here. The Minnesota State Patrol is looking to hire some new troopers and to fill a class. How many people are you expecting to train in that class?
We're hoping to fill 48 spots. 48 spots at the State Patrol Academy, and I believe it'll start in January up at Camp Ripley. And it'll be both a mix of what we call traditional, which is folks that already have their post-certification, or LEADO, the Law Enforcement Training Opportunity, a 2- or 4-year degree, and get them through that school so they can go to the academy.
So for those listeners that might be interested in applying to be a Minnesota State Patrol trooper, go to mntrooper.com and get more information, and you better do it quick because they're accepting applications through July 31st at 4 p.m. Jim, a lot of folks don't know that they know if they listen to the show about what a facility Camp Ripley is, but the Minnesota State Patrol does a lot of training up there.
We do. We do one in-service training per year up there, which is essentially a week long. You drive up one day, you have 3.5 days of training, you drive back. The facility also just put in with the state of Minnesota, partial funding and part federal, it's a track. It has highway, freeway, a skid pad. So the state patrol takes full advantage of that being on the facility and the grounds at Camp Ripley. And I know Camp Ripley takes advantage of utilizing that to also offer up to federal law enforcement agencies, local PDs. So it's a well-used state asset.
Jim, we've just got about 30 seconds left. What would you say to our listeners if they were thinking about applying to be a Minnesota State Patrol trooper?
Without a doubt, it's the best job I've had. I walk out of my house at night 5 minutes before I need to be in my office, and my office is 20 feet outside my front door.
And you're hoping to fill some of those 48 spots with some of our veterans that had some experience in the military that would help them get into school.
Absolutely, sir.
Jim, I'd like to thank you for taking time out of your day to come join us today.
Thank you very much, and hope to see you again soon.
This is Jim Swanson, State Trooper with the Minnesota State Patrol. Joining me now is the Senior Enlisted Advisor to the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Command Sergeant Major Cindy Kahlberg. Sergeant Major, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Tom. It's great to be here.
Sergeant Major, I've heard rumors that there's a change coming.
There is a big change coming.
And it affects you?
It does. I'm actually going to be going into retirement in August, so it's coming up really fast.
So you came out of retirement to take the top position, the Senior Enlisted Advisor of the Minnesota National Guard, and we're sending you back into retirement.
Yes, that's true. I came back out of retirement about 3 years ago. So I've done a 3-year tour in this position, and it's been absolutely wonderful. And I've gotten to do a lot of things that I'm very blessed to have done. But it's time to pass off the torch, and I'll be doing that in August.
Must have been an honor to become the first female command sergeant major in Minnesota National Guard history.
Absolutely. I can't tell you what an honor it's been to work with all the soldiers and airmen and the great leaders we have in the organization, and not to mention all of the civilian organizations in the Yellow Ribbon Networks and everyone who supports the Minnesota National Guard. It's just been an honor and a blessing in my life.
And Sergeant Majors, from where I've sat and looked at your schedule, very busy as well.
Yes, it has been a very busy 3 years. So I think I'll probably take the first week off and sleep, but after that we'll be going again.
So, Sergeant Major, were there any favorite things that happened in those 3 years?
Oh, my gosh, Tom, I think there was a million favorite things. You know, we've had a lot of awesome soldiers and airmen doing wonderful things that I've gotten to be a part of. The best warrior competitions, one that just ended, actually, and so we've had a lot of success with our soldiers there. Our Airmen of the Year competitions have been wonderful. Obviously, you know, we have the Women in Combat Initiative where we're putting women into units they've never been in before. That's been very, very exciting to be a part of. We've created mentorship programs and we've advanced diversity in the organization. I could go on and on. There's been so many great moments.
Seems like we've talked a lot of them, but of those moments on the radio, was there anything in particular that was maybe the toughest?
Well, obviously, I think some of the toughest are, you know, losing some of our soldiers, and then, you know, obviously when we have injured soldiers on deployment and things like that, those are really tough things to deal with, and everybody in the organization has had a hard time dealing with those things as they arise.
And I know you've gone and visited some wounded soldiers when they came back.
Absolutely, many of them. I'm actually going again next week to see some for the last time.
And Sergeant Major, do we know yet who's going to be the new Command Sergeant Major?
We do. We have selected someone from our organization, Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham. He's coming to us from the Recruiting and Retention Battalion, but he's had a long history in the organization, and he's been in our operations for a while, and he's been the Command Sergeant Major of the RTI up at Camp Ripley, our academy. So he has a lot of experience behind him. He's very excited to take over this position, and I'm excited to hand off to him. He's got a lot of energy and a lot of insight and a lot of ideas to take the organization to the next level, and I think we're both really excited for the transition.
Sergeant Major, it's been a pleasure to talk with you for the last 3 years, and I hope your retirement goes well and that you come back and check in with us once in a while.
I'd love to do that, Tom, and thanks for allowing me to be on your station and for being able to talk with you periodically over these 3 years. I've appreciated it.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thanks.
That was the Senior Enlisted Advisor to the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Command Sergeant Major Cindy Kahlberg. We're just about out of time. If you have a mailbag question or a suggestion for a topic you'd like us to address, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com and click on Contact Us to send us a note. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Brigadier General David Hamler, State Trooper James Swanson, Command Sergeant Major Cindy Kahlberg, Commissioner Larry Shalito of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as we talk about the help available for our homeless veterans and the upcoming Armed Forces Appreciation Day at the Minnesota State Fair. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
You've been listening to Minnesota Military Radio with Tom Lyons. Tom is the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition firm. This has been a production of Clear Channel, MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com, the Minnesota National Guard, BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org, and the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Podcasts of the show are available at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.